Weekend Mornings with Glenn Van Zutphen. Replay from Money FM 89.3. Weekend Mornings with Glenn Van Zutphen on Money FM 89.3.
Our very our amazing guest, Alexander Duric, the former Singapore football player, striker, in the studio today. And Neil, this was your suggestion to have him on. Thank you very much. It was a great idea. And we've got a story to tell about Alex's past that is just one that none of us can relate to.
Well, I mean, you know, Alex has written an autobiography about it. He speaks about it, does a lot of public speaking. Money FM is a story, is a station for inspirational, motivational stories. You will not beat Alexander Duric's story. It is impossible.
Yeah, I agree.
You just will not beat it. So I'll just set the scene for anyone who's not familiar. Alex, you fill in the gaps. You grew up in the old Yugoslavia.
Yes.
And then in 1991, the war breaks out.
Yep.
And then what happens from there?
Well, basically, I mean, I was in army. I went to as in Yugoslavia, we all males need to go in army. That's a compulsory, like in Singapore.
So, national service.
Yes, yeah. National service. You have to serve. So I signed for the army. I went to the officer school. I become an army officer. And in 91, when we all kind of felt that there's something coming up in our country, because we you know, many states was in former Yugoslavia wasn't happy with.
So this is the old Yugoslavia
going to break up, and in 91 actually they start breaking up, and Slovenia was the first one to break out, and then Croatia was the next one, and so we as a national army we try kind of. Not to kind of stop the breakup, but kind of keep a peace in the country, which one was really difficult. And I was sent in one of the worst part of the war in that time, a city called Vukovar. And basically, my job actually with my unit was kind of protect civilians. But when I went there and first few days, I was kind of opened my eyes, because it's actually it was just basically. Blood killing,
ethnic cleansing.
Ethnic cleansing, and you are just going to the kind of civil war when is you can basically kill anybody with any kind of any time anyway. So
and you were basically asked to shoot on a village, right, where there were women and children, and you refused to do it.
Yeah, my first few days was kind of protected those villages, but in the end, in command meetings, I got the kind of order that, I need to step up with my soldiers and start kind of fighting and killing. And to be honest, I was young. I mean, I was a young officer, only 21 at that time. And I stood up and I told my commander that I'm not going to command and my soldiers to kill innocent people, because I saw that in a few days that everywhere you go you see the dead bodies, but not any pistols, not any rifles, anything. That means it's
killing
just
unarmed people.
Killing unarmed people, and and in the war you probably fight against army. I mean, people who have it's with their guns and all this, but not the innocent people. You just kill just because they are different, I mean, different religion and different ethnical. And so I stood up and I said, I'm not going to command my soldiers to be, criminals.
Killers,
And killers in the future for the rest of their life. So, of course, didn't go well with my higher commander.
And you was arrested for this?
Yeah, same day. Same moment I was arrested by military police. I was sent to the prison, take out my all my command stars, and basically I was spent there a few days, and before they kind of decide to what to do with me, they send me back to my lucky for me I was transferred back to my command in a camp in my hometown in Bosnia, and from there was all about calling and trying to get myself out of the jail, because it was easier because I was in my hometown, and my dad and some of my friends got me out for day, and same night I moved out from the country in the night, and basically
you just took off, huh?
Yeah, I took off because it was only way for me to survive was like that.
So and, you then you was an exile from your own country.
Yes, and I
was on the run basically.
Yes,
and then while you was away, I believe your poor mother died while you was away.
Yeah,
is that correct?
My mom and my half family was killed later in the 1993 when it was kind of civil war broke up in Bosnia. It was even worse than anywhere else in any part of the ex-Yugoslavia. And honestly, that night when I was kind of crossing, I can still remember, I'll never forget that I'm crossing the border illegally and to Hungary from Yugoslavia. And I remember that kind of like thinking about, gosh, you know, I think I lost my home now and I'm going to, don't know where I'm going because definitely I knew there will be long, long time before I can even go back. And actually, it's happened 10 years later. It was my first time I stepped back in in my own country, and it was totally different because I lost my half family, and my brother was in the war for 6 years and fights, and I lost my, after that, my dad died also. So it's like, you know, and I was like, well, world refugees, to be honest. I mean, stepping into the new country, like, you know, when I was 22, and you know, with no money, with no future, no nothing. It was like really tough, but there's
but then this is where the story gets interesting. I mean, because people will fall off their chairs at this point because you're on the run from your own country, essentially a new country, Bosnia. You've lost half of your family, which is tragic. You're working in the black market to earn a living, and then you get a call from your new country, the country you're on the run from. Is that correct?
Well, I wasn't, there was a, it's a big bit, because the history now, we have a very, very funny history, but yes, in 92.
This is extraordinary, listeners. This is absolutely extraordinary.
Yes, when the Yugoslavia totally break in the 92, in early 92, in April, Bosnia-Herzegovina become the independent country. So I was already kind of, before that, I was in two World Cups in the canoeing. I was canoeing and kayaking in the flat water. So I was already champion, five-time champion in Yugoslavia, former Yugoslavia. So all my kind of steps was before I left the country was to go in the 1992 Barcelona Olympic. I was like one of the guy who was kind of been selected to be there, and unfortunately I crossed the country in the night with not my pedal, nothing, no future. So I got a call in June, end of the May in from the new country, which one is, was Bosnia Herzegovina, and if I was willing to kind of step in and be one of the first Olympians for the new country called Bosnia Herzegovina.
So that's historic. He's going to be an Olympian for a brand new country that he's previously been on the run from.
And basically, you know, I mean, it's always a great honor, but there's a problem in that time, not for me, but for my family and all this. We, all my family was fighting against that flag, which one I supposed to be carry in an Olympic game. Yes, because in the 90s, we all believed that Bosnia Herzegovina is a very Muslim country, and all the Croatian Serbs was fighting against that flag. And and for me as a Serb, I'm an Orthodox. You know, going to for the Olympic Games was just saying, danger, because the people are made even more angry these people in my ethnical side. But I never really believed, my parents really never teach me to hate anybody. Yeah. I didn't really, I mean.
Well, and in fact, for many, many decades, the Bosnian Serbs and everyone got along just quite well together, right?
Yes, they've always been, but after this, now after 20 years later, they all live together in my hometown. It's back to there, like, how was it before? It's like a funny.
But I believe you carried the flag at the opening ceremony. There was only a few athletes, right?
Yeah, there was 10 of us, just 10.
10 athletes. That's all they had. Their
first Olympians for Bosnia.
And one upset of them, your family, I believe. Your father, is that right?
Yeah, and then I definitely wanted to go, and I told the Olympic Committee in Bosnia, I said, yes, I will be there. And they said, Alex, do you know where you go into it? Because, you know, we don't want to upset, you know, you make sure you are. I said, no, I'm ready, because I believe I'm a Bosnian. I'm born in Bosnia. I raised there. I have friends from all different ethnical groups, and I don't care. Mm. I never care about that, and so I went. And funny things, when you go to the Olympic Games, you are, you know, in most normal cases, like, yeah, you are a celebrity. I mean, because you, people talk about you. They are. In my case, was the everything was different. half of my country was after me. Yeah. But the moment they heard my name, then because there was announced,
right,
then I'm going today. So all my ethnical, they said, okay, time for to kill this guy, and we will wait for him to kill him one day. Or and wow, then they came to my house. Of course, straight away they came to my house. They find where I live. A lot of these army guys, and told my dad, my brother. I said, tell Alex and good luck, because you know, we wait for him to cut his head off, and so this kind of thing. So as Olympian, you know, that you hear that, they're like, okay. Uh-uh. And then you know, another stories was my family in the end under pressure. Also, my dad wasn't happy for me to go. After that, never ever talked to me until he died, and never speak to me again.
Because you went in the Olympics?
Yes, because I went to the flag, because he and my brother was at that time already in the army fighting against them. Yeah. He kind of told me, he said, it's your choice, but you'll not be son anymore, my son.
So, you're going to pay the price.
So. Yes. And so I paid a huge price, because it was difficult after that in sense. I used to call home. Mm. After when the alliance opened up in 1995, it was a long time ago, and I used to call home all the time, because I just wanted to hear my brother, my dad, and used to kind of answer, and I'd say, Dad, is Alex, and he will just hang, and I'll call again, and he will hang again, and then until my brother will take a phone and say, Dad, so I tried to talk, but it never happened, yeah, until he died, never.
Alexander Durich is in the studio with us today, the former Singapore striker, and telling us about his experiences growing up and surviving the war in Yugoslavia. This story is so important. Unfortunately, we don't have all day to talk about it, but I do want to move into your story now, because it's a really interesting story, the work that you're doing with sport in Singapore, trying to teach the next generation of kids, and tell us about what you're working on and where the opportunities that you see are right now, bringing on the next generation of sporting kids here.
Yeah, I mean, now I'm basically involved in a award for the Sport SG. It's used to be Sports Singapore's Sport Council.
Yeah.
And I'm under the umbrella of the Active SG. I'm a principal of the Active SG Football Academy. Basically, 4 years ago, I started the program, which one is, we're always lucky in Singapore, because I've been here 20 years, and we kind of forget always that, as you know, you need to invest in the youngest kids to have some future in the near future, or long kind of process, especially in football. So I've been doing that in the last 4 years. I'm nurturing it's a national movement. We're trying to get the kids out to play sports. One of the sports is football. As you know, most kids love football. So yeah. I have about, at the moment, 13 football centers around the Singapore.
Wow.
It's very cheap. It's very affordable for every family in Singapore. So I have boys and girls. I started actually from 6 years old and to 12, then 12 years old to 16. But now I open up in an even younger age group in I call preschool, and they are from 3 to 5 years old.
Wow.
Basically, I'm teaching them not only football, because as I always believe it, you know, just teaching the football is never enough. And because I saw some very good talents here, footballers, but what I'm trying to get them also involved is a lot of life values in the football. And it's great, because the football is a team sport. And you know, you can involve a lot of kids to playing together, and it's good, because it's also same time you mixture all these kids in from different yeah, coming from different ethnical groups, and they are enjoying the playing, and it's like, and we need to actually have that, because it's a long process. We may have a really good talent coming through already, good talent kids, but we need to stay and kind of push that in as long as we can, and because in maybe 5-10 years, those boys will be, you know, in future star in our football. We need them, because if we want to go any further. And as we know, in the moment, we're struggling in the national level, in our national teams. But I can tell you that I see really bright talents in my, at least my academy. So it's,
and so many lessons they learn, right? As as a team sport, and
it's a team
and
sport. Their own discipline, health, yeah. The resilience, and it's a lot of helping each other, and they it's great. It's really great in initial from Sport SG, and from my side, Active SG. So it's hopefully, yeah, we just need to be patient, because sometimes, you know, that's a problem in here. People don't have a patient, in the sport.
That brings us right up to date. I mean, yes. Unfortunately, this week, the under-18s, they had a heavy defeat, 11-0 defeat on the road this week against South Korea.
I watched that game.
Yeah, there's no quick fix. We know that. It's a long-term thing. What does Singapore football need to do to get back to where it was when you were playing, where, you know, Singapore was the Southeast Asian champions?
Yeah, I mean, it's like at the moment, I think, as you know, in the football is all about money these days. We need really to try find that invest a lot of money. We need money. Money is it's one of the things which is, unfortunately, is now it's in very heavily involved in the football all around the world. As you can see, they're all big clubs with a huge budget. We need a little bit more money, unfortunately, I watched that game in 11. Yes, it's a huge defeat, and I mean, it's never nice to see this number, you know. I can tell you that it's not actually boys; it's just lack of competition, lack of preparation for these kind of games. Because international, I play international games. You go into an international level, it's totally different level of football. You know, physically, mentally, and it's so tough. And our boys don't have that. Don't have
the
that experience.
Toughness.
They don't have that experience. I mean, I watched them when they was coming from tunnels, and I was watching this our boys and Korean boys. The Korean boys was like me. It's like a 2 meters. They're so strong. They are physically. You can see this boys is like a really ready to play for the first team. Our boys is still lacking this opportunity to come break into the first team. The league is here for them. It's not strong enough.
But we can change that, right? That's just gym training, conditioning.
Of course, yeah,
that could be done. That doesn't cost much,
yeah,
does it? To get kids in the gym.
Doesn't. But that's our problem. We always kind of missed some steps in the preparation and bringing these kids in. So they probably, most of these boys, when I saw our under-18, they probably never been in gym, because then some of these things is lacking, because I don't know if it's, as you know, he is very much in education, and is very little time for these boys to kind of focus on the full time in football, because they are obviously busy with the school, homeworks, and all these things. So it's hard. It's hard, but can be changed. I believe that we can change this, and we just need to get the right structure for all these different age groups, and focus on them, and really teach them what is very important. They need really physically. They have to be stronger. Yeah. Even if you know, and I wasn't great in a technical player, but I get another. So I thought, my coach used to tell me, well, if you don't have that, then make sure you're the fittest guy. You will kill them with your fitness. It's true.
And you're still fit.
Yeah, I mean,
very fit.
Then on your fitness. Yeah. The players who you're playing against, if you are fitter than them, they sooner or later they'll crack, because they can't follow you for 90 minutes, because game is quite long. Yeah. So our boys, they're not there. They're not there, and it's...
But
it's,
can be fixed.
Can be fixed. This one is easy to fix, because it's for running and gym, is you don't need much really equipment or anything. You just need
to push the people.
Yeah, and then... I find also been coaching, I mean, looking the kids here, I think they don't, I mean, my generation, when I was growing up, and we grow up with age, we grow up with an age. When you see the kid, when I was 16, and I was really 16, maybe older, in my mentally, I was maybe older than that. Here, I don't know if it's, I see my kids at home. I have four of them, and I see them, and also I always tell them, you make sure you grow with your age, because they are so pumped. We all pumped here, and it's like life is really good here.
It's a bit of immaturity.
Yeah, and so it's very hard to kind of and all like kids here. There's especially these sportsmen. They have this limitation. They stay in this comfort zone. They don't want to break this comfort zone, and if you don't break this comfort zone, it's very hard to. to improve it any level.
Well, I want to bring it right up to date and make a nice sort of, there's a nice positive ending to your story, of course, because there is a young up-and-coming player. He's about to be 1 year old, I believe, next month. He is the next Durridge generation. Now, it's a poignant story, but it's a happy ending because it ties in with what happened to your poor mother, I believe. You've told me the Muslim aspect of it. So to bring it right up to date, tell us what you've done and why with that baby.
I have three old kids. I have two biologic kids, and most of my friends who is closer to me, I adopted a child in 9 years ago, a Singapore boy. He's now nine, Massimo. And basically what I did, I've been kind of looking to adopt another child, and that happened last year in December. I got a call that there's a baby in Malaysia, and they need a new home, they need the love and family. And so I went there and saw the boy, and I brought him in, did all the paperwork. So I'm a new father in my adopted son. He's he's now 11 months. He's going to be on the 30th November, 1 year.
It's, wow. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. it's great. I mean, it's... What I'm doing this is just because I really grew up in a very poor. I didn't really, some days I really didn't have what to eat because me and my brother. But so I always stayed same guy who was, grew up in this small village in Bosnia. So, and I always believe that I need to give back and to back to the, to this world. And this is one of my part, small part to, help those kids and get a good home and good education, a lot of love and be loved. And so he's a great boy and crawling now, trying to stand up. And so hopefully my older kids, they play basketball. They're not really into the football. So hopefully he will. He's the hope. It's all my last hope that he's going to be one day a football player.
Fantastic.
Well, special thanks to Alexander Durich, the former Singapore striker. Now the principal for Sport Singapore and Active SG, working with the football academy there and bringing on the next generation. And good luck with that task. And let's hope that Singapore can really return to some greatness in the S League and football around the region.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for being with us.
And let's see the next Durich playing for the national team in about, 17, 18 years from now.
Yes.
The clock is ticking.
Yes.
There you go. Thanks
so much. Precious, yeah.
Thanks, Alex.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.